Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
No, let's try that again. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Perfect. All right, we're going to go back in time real quick. We're going to go back in time to August 1st, 2012. We've all gathered together for the opening of the New York Stock Exchange. We work for a company called Knight Capital Group. So we're the developers and we're the operations team. And we're so excited about our new software that we're having a party to celebrate it going live. It trades in the New York Stock Exchange. And we were so excited that we wrote this application that is going to show us in real time exactly how much money we're going to start making. We've invited all of our C-level executives, our product owner, our stakeholders. We're all really, really excited. So let's just sit here and watch exactly how much money we're going to start making. I'm going to let that sink in for a second, because every second we are losing $170,000. $170,000 is being lost every second our software is running. Clearly, this is not what we expected. So the developers and the operations guys come together and start trying to figure out what in the world happened. How are we losing $170,000 per second? We deployed our software to 8 servers, of which we find out one of them is doing the wrong thing. So clearly we try and fix it. After we're done fixing it, we now have 8 servers doing the wrong thing. So we're losing even more money. This is because we had to do our deployment manually. We had to do our deployment by hand. We had no way of rolling this stuff back in case of an emergency. After running for just 1 minute, just 60 seconds, we're gonna lose over $10 million. Like geniuses, we keep trying to fix this for 45 minutes. So at 10:15, someone basically just shuts the system down. Go into the server room, just start kicking over servers, pulling wires out of the wall, do whatever you have to, but stop the software from trading. After 45 minutes, when the dust settled, they had lost $460 million. So the software that I'm going to talk to you today about could have saved this company $500 million. The saddest thing about this entire story is I didn't make a word of it up. This actually happened. This is a real story because they did not have a proper DevOps pipeline, because they didn't have the software in place necessary to prevent this from happening. So this was Knight Capital Group, but my question to you is, what is the impact to your organization? Are you the poor guy who has to have the pager when you do a deployment? Are you the guy that gets the call when all of a sudden the database changes didn't go in correctly? Right? I've been that guy. It takes years off of your life every time you do a deployment. This poor guy, he not only ruined his life, he ruined his entire company's life. They literally went bankrupt. You can go and look up Knight Capital Group SEC filing, and it's basically a 28-page bug report about how this actually happened. Okay? Now that I have your attention, my name is Donovan Brown. And I'm going to be spending the next hour with you talking to you about DevOps and specifically the offering that we have. You might have seen some of this in Ed's talk. The only difference here is mine are going to actually be bits moving. And we're going to go a little bit deeper and talk about how we can actually implement this stuff. Before joining Microsoft, I was what they called a process consultant, very similar to Ed. That's a fancy way of saying I flew all over the world installing and implementing Team Foundation Server. TFS, for those who don't know, is a collaboration hub. It has source control, work item tracking, build, all these great things. For if you need to take an idea and turn it into a working piece of software, TFS has you covered. It has you covered now. When I started 7 years ago, that wasn't always the case. I show up at a client site, we'd be implementing Team Foundation Server, I'd get their source control in there, I'd get their bug tracking in there, their work item tracking in there, I'd even get automated build in there. And they're all excited and they're looking at me like, what's next? And they're like, okay, Donovan, we have this build, how do we now get it to a development environment? And then from the development environment into QA, and then finally into production. And while we're doing that, we want to make sure we monitor the web.configs and change that stuff. And I politely just start packing up my stuff, backing away from the table, hoping they didn't notice that I'm trying to get out of there, because it was like, adios, guys, I can't help you do that. TFS has no facilities or didn't have any facilities that allowed us to do that, right? They'd ask me nicely, they'd give me those puppy dog eyes, I'd feel bad, I'm like, okay, this is what I'll do for you. What I will do is I will take build, and I will write you a custom task, or I will write you a custom activity. And what it will do is it will copy and X-copy your files from build over into your dev environment. But that's as far as I can take you guys. No matter how much you beg and plead, I can't get build to wake back up and then promote it to QA. And then wake back up again when you're ready for it to promote to production. It just doesn't do that. Build should do build. We needed something else that just simply did not exist back then that would take the code and actually release it for us. I joined Microsoft December 13th, 2013, so just over a little bit over a year ago. About the same time, we acquired the software I'm going to be talking to you about today. So we kind of joined together, and I attached myself to it because I kept thinking to myself, wow, if we had this piece of software when I was a process consultant, I would have been able to help my customers completely, to actually give them everything that they were wanting for. And now we can give it to them, right? And so I've attached myself to the hip to release management. I've been speaking about it all over the world, and I'm really excited to show you a deep level dive of what we have new, because we've listened to all the pain points. We were kind of trading war stories over here before the talk. We've addressed a lot of that stuff, right? And we've heard that, and I'm preaching that. I'm speaking to you today as a TSP. That basically means I sell the tools that I'm showing you today. I've been recruited by Redmond to come up to the mothership. So in June, I am actually changing roles. I'm going to the engineering team, and I'm going to take all those war stories with me, and I'm going to help shape what we produce coming forward to make sure that we have the best DevOps solution that we possibly can. We know that not everyone's on Microsoft. We know there's people out there writing on Linux. We know there are people writing Java, and we're going to help those people as well. Okay? So enough about that. Let's talk about some fun stuff. You might have noticed, I didn't hear any laughing, which I'm very shocked that I'm the 12th best air hockey player in the world and no one laughed. Of course, if we find an air hockey table, I will be the only one laughing. I am also a competitive driver, and I am a diehard developer, guys. I am you. I sling code every single day. It's just what I do to have fun. That just happens to be what I do for a living as well. I tweet a lot, and you can also follow me on donovanbrown.com. My buddy Jeffrey Snover just tweeted that he reached 10,000 followers. And I did some quick math. And if everyone in this room follows me, I'll be catching up to him, and I'll only need about 9,000 more. So help me make progress, and everyone follow me on Twitter, and I can see if I can get 9,000 more people to do that before the end of the week. All right, so let's go ahead and start talking about what we're really here to talk about. It's about release management, but this is a different talk because I'm specifically talking about giving Java code over into a Linux environment using the Microsoft stack. It's a world that is very foreign for Microsoft, right? Why would you ever expect a Java developer to be using TFS to deploy to a Linux machine? You just wouldn't have done it in years past, but we can actually do that today. We have great integration with companies like Chef. Those are great guys. They have spent countless hours with me teaching me the Chef way of doing things to make sure that when we integrate Chef with RM, we're not bastardizing the way you're supposed to use Chef. We're actually using Chef the proper way, and we're layering on top of it the value add that is release management. So we've been working closely with those guys, great group of guys. I can't say enough about them. If you're familiar with Chef, you might not be as familiar with desired state configuration. So I'm going to bring you up to speed on what DSC is, what it can be used for, because it's very, very similar. I almost put them in the same buckets, right? They solve very similar problems, but we have an offering for there too, and it actually works on Linux, so we'll talk about that. I want to dispel the fact that TFS is just for .NET. A lot of people are under the impression that, oh, you guys use TFS, you must be .NET developers. As a process consultant, I would go into a client and I'd help them implement TFS, and then I'd realize that they had a Power Builder team, they had a Java team, but they wouldn't let me talk to them, and I didn't understand why. Because the tools that we have for TFS work for Java too. They work for Power Builder. So why won't you let us talk to those individuals? Because we have value here at Microsoft that they can actually use. But you're not letting me talk to them. So I've basically taken it upon myself to break down those walls and prove to you that your Java developers can use this. So as far as I'm concerned, all code is created equal. I don't care what technology you're using to develop it, nor do I care what platform you're using to deploy it to. We can help you here at Microsoft. We have the tools. We have the power. We have work item tracking. We have bug tracking. We have test case management. What we mentioned this morning, being able to compile Objective-C natively inside of Windows to target, that's insane, right? That's just stuff we never would have done before. But we're trying to be where you are. Not everyone's a .NET developer, right? And we have to understand that and embrace that and give you tools that you can use regardless if you're a .NET developer or not. And that's what we've been trying to do here. So we talked a little bit about Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. Team Foundation Server is not the next version of VSS. I almost want to make everyone in this room say that with me, because that is like my biggest pet peeve when I go to a customer site. And I understand you need to get off VSS, you might have outgrown it, but this is not the next version of that. This is a completely different tool. Yes, it has source control, which is what VSS was, but it also has all that other stuff I mentioned: automated build, release management, test case management, bug tracking, agile planning tools, the whole shooting match. We have everything that you need from a software company's perspective to take an idea and turn it into a working piece of software. And it's one vendor. You don't have to go and buy one piece from one company, one piece from another company, and then hope that they actually talk to each other. You get everything that you need, no matter your technology or platform, from one vendor. If you don't want to install it yourself, we also have it in the cloud for you as well, via VSO. And we're moving more and more functionality there. And VSO, ironically enough, gets updated every 3 weeks. Every 3 weeks, there's new features there. And then we try to bring those down every 3 months to what's on-prem. Some companies are not comfortable with the cloud, so we still offer a on-prem version of everything that I'm going to be showing you here today as well. Okay? How do we get you there? Again, we're going to come to where you are. If you're using .NET, the experience is fantastic. Visual Studio, I believe, hands down, is the best IDE on the planet. I'm biased. If you're as old as I am, you might remember a small computer company called Compaq Computers. Anyone old enough to remember that? That's where I started. And I started there writing Windows applications, MFC back then, right, if you can remember that, C++, the good old days. But we also have people, so if you're inside Visual Studio, Team Explorer, experience is great. If you're using Eclipse, and I mean Eclipse anywhere, Unix, Mac, Linux, or on Windows, you can use Team Explorer everywhere because it runs on all those platforms. It gives you that same rich experience that the .NET developers have, but in an IDE that you're comfortable with, which I'll be showing you today. I've actually developed an application that has a Java front end and a .NET back end, and we're actually going to build them simultaneously, we're going to deploy them simultaneously, and we're even going to test them simultaneously using these tools. And it's effortless. I've done this demo 3 times. This is the 3rd generation of this particular demo, and it has never been easier. I was actually shocked at how fast I could put the pieces together to get this demo to work. I just did this probably a couple months ago at TechReady 20, and it was not this easy to do. But I'll show you how we do it inside of Eclipse. Not all Java developers use Eclipse. Some of them use IntelliJ. We're going to go ahead and get you taken care of there as well because we have integration. And if you have some old legacy stuff like Power Builder, VB6, C++ 6, we have you covered there as well. Wherever you are, we're going to come and meet you there. Release management can work with Windows and Linux. We mentioned Docker today in our keynote. We've mentioned Docker in the past. There's a lot of nice Docker integration. And I'm going to show you how we can actually add those tasks directly inside of release management because we actually have Docker support already. If you're going to Chef, if you're familiar with Chef, you might be doing a lot of development in Linux, but they also support Windows as well. And we're going to be using Chef today in this demo. I'm going to be showing you how to use Chef to be able to manage your environments, but still layer that polish and that sugar on top of it that is release management. That gives you some of the things that Chef just doesn't give you out of the box by itself. And obviously desired state configuration, or DSC. Or I'm going to talk about that. We're not actually using it in this demo, so I'm not going to belabor that point. I have other decks where I go into more detail, and you can actually look those up on Channel 9, so I won't bore you with those right now. So what are we trying to manage with release management? What is the problem that we're trying to solve? What we're trying to solve is this problem. All of this has to be managed and organized when you want to do a proper deployment. Servers have to be provisioned and configured. That's where Chef and DSC and things like Puppet are going to come in play and help you actually provision and stand those machines up and then configure them. Because I need to make sure that that machine has IIS running on it or my web app is not going to work. I need to make sure it has the right version of the .NET framework on there or my application is not going to work. And I don't want a poor guy clicking and downloading installers and running through that, because if I needed to scale out and stand up another machine, I have to make sure I can schedule around that guy's ability to go click all the buttons and stand up that machine. And because a human being is doing it, there's a chance he's going to make a mistake, just like the poor guy did that cost them $460 million. It was literally a poor guy who did it right 7 out of 8 times, and the 8th time he screwed up. And if the 8th time the guy screws up trying to configure one of our environments, how much is that going to cost us? Who's going to know? So we're going to actually automate that as much as we possibly can. After we have the environment provisioned and configured, we now need to install our application upon that machine. But once the application is installed, guess what? Dev points at one place, but QA points somewhere else. and production has to point yet somewhere else. That's configuration. So it's not just easy enough just to copy the files across. Once the files are copied across, they need to be modified and updated, and we want to make sure that humans aren't doing that either. How many ASP.NET developers do I have? Okay. How many of you have been burned by a web.config? Everyone raise your hands again. Right? Because if you don't raise your hand, you're not an ASP.NET developer. We've all gone into a web.config and accidentally fat-fingered something, left off our angle bracket, or a quote, forgot to close our quotes properly, right? And you get the yellow screen of death. I cannot parse this file any longer. Because a human being went in there with the best intentions and just simply made a mistake. And I'm going to show you, my favorite feature of release management is the way that they deal with web.config. So I will talk to you about that one at length. So we have to install the application. We have to configure the application. And then there's test. I am a huge fan of Coded UI. Brian was talking about me going to Austin. I'm doing one of my favorite talks in Austin about Coded UI. I basically take you to the weeds on that technology. We literally write them from scratch, all in C#, and it's just an awesome, awesome demo. But not everyone likes Coded UI. Some people like Selenium. Any Selenium users in here? I just started playing with that. I have to say, very impressed. Very, very impressed with Selenium. And I'm going to show you how we can actually use those tests directly inside of our pipeline. Right? You don't have to do anything special. We actually know how to run them and even store the results and publish them with our releases as well. Right? So again, we're coming to where you are. After our automated tests run, there's just some tests that just can't be automated. Right? It's just either they're too expensive to automate, they're very, what we call, inconsistent. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And it's easier just to have a human being run them. So what we can do with release management, because we have the ability to notify you and to wait for approvals, we can actually deploy your application, run a battery of automated tests for you, and then pause and let you go into that environment, do whatever verifications that you need, run whatever manual tests that you need, and then we'll pick it back up once you say it's okay and start promoting that across for you. So we manage not only your automated, but also your manual testing. And then finally, we have the notifications and the approvals. This is huge. Even if I had gone inside of build and told it to copy the files across for you, who said it was okay? I guess the guy who triggered the build. Because there's no other way for us to say someone else can go in there and stop it or pause it. But we actually give you that ability right now. So I really like the fact that I can do my configuration of my applications and the approvals and notifications. And that's what we lay on top of any technology you're currently using today that simply moves bits. If you already have a battery of PowerShell that knows how to do a lot of cool automation for you, you can continue to use that and simply add the notifications and approvals to it. If you're already using Chef and you don't get those notifications and approvals, we can add that for you. Same thing with Docker, same thing with Puppet. So just think of it as a coat of polish that we're going to put on the pipeline that you currently have today. So how does it all work? In the center of the world is something called an RM server. It is where your configuration information is stored. It's where all of the decisions are made, what the environments look like, what you want to happen on each one of those environments. We store that in what we call the server. It's essentially just a SQL Server database with a web API on top of it, right? We can install this on-prem, or you can also have us hosted for you in what we call RMO, or Release Management Online. So if you're using VSO, you can already leverage RMO. They talk to each other right out of the box. It's a really nice environment. After we have the server configured, what we have then are the endpoints to which we want to deploy. And if you look at the icons, you can see I have a Linux icon, an Azure icon, and a Windows icon. You could put AWS or Google, doesn't matter what cloud you want to use. We're going to be able to target any of those machines, on-prem or in the cloud. Now, you need to trigger a release, and you can trigger a release one of two ways. You can either trigger release manually, or you can actually have continuous delivery. Continuous delivery is the ability for someone to check in code. That code then trigger a build. That build then communicate with the release system saying, I have bits that I need you to go deploy, and it'll start moving it through the pipeline. Literally no human intervention beyond checking in code starts this domino effect that will end up with your code running in production. So that's what we mean by continuous delivery, and we give you that right out of the box as well. In this analogy here, or this slide, we're going to have a human being go into one of the user interfaces. We used to have a WPF client. How many people are using the WPF client? All right, I'm sorry. We're fixing that right now. I'm not going to touch the WPF client at all today, so you're going to see what the new user interface is. It's really, really nice. So you're going to go to a client, and you're going to say, I would like to release a build. The server's going to say, OK, great. I'm going to then collect all of the different parts of your application that need to be deployed, and then orchestrate with the individual machines where those bits need to go, regardless if they're Windows or otherwise. We can use Chef, Docker, DSC, PowerShell, Microsoft Deployment Agent, whatever technology you need to get to those machines, we'll leverage it for you and orchestrate it and give you all the approvals. All right. So what is DSC? I promised you I'd talk to you about it. We're not actually using it in this demo, but it's still something that we're really excited about and we want to make sure people are aware of. I think the best way to describe DSC is to first describe a world without it, which is the world that most of us live in today. Most of us will assume the state of the machine to which we intend to deploy our application to. We assume that if it's a .NET application, that the .NET framework is installed. We assume if it's an ASP.NET application, that IIS is already installed. We make those assumptions, and based on those assumptions, we then will run a series of actions upon that particular machine. We'll xcopy files across, we'll go back in and deploy our database, or whatever the case might be. And then afterwards, we hope, fingers crossed, that it's in the right environment. However, if any of our assumptions were wrong, we get the yellow screen of death, or we get a page cannot load, or any sorts of different errors that our application is going to throw because the assumptions were incorrect. Or maybe it worked yesterday, but someone went onto that machine and did something to it, and now it doesn't work today, right? We've all been there to where, I don't understand, it just worked last night. Has anyone touched that machine, and we have to go on this wild goose chase to find out who flipped what bit that caused our applications to stop running? Desired State Configuration solves all of those issues for you. Instead of going onto a machine and physically configuring it, what you do instead is you describe what that machine must look like. You simply, in text, say, it must have .NET Framework 4.5. It must have IIS. It must have this user in this group, and it must have this port on the firewall open. That are facts that must be true. And I just give that information to the server. The server then takes that information and it gets the current configuration of itself. It tests it against the desired configuration that you've just sent me. And should it not match, it magically just makes it so. It knows how to install all those bits. It knows how to open up ports on your firewall, and it just does it. The reason that it can just do it is because of things called DSC resources. Resources are small blobs of PowerShell that give you the ability to do those three things: get, test, and set. We have some for files, so if you want to make sure that a file exists on a hard drive, you use something called a file resource. If you want to make sure that a Windows feature is installed, you use something called a Windows resource. You kind of get the idea. We have all these different resources that we give you that you can use to describe what the machine must look like. Now, you can just imagine, you might have scenarios where that resource doesn't exist yet. Well, guys like myself spend lots of time trying to figure out what you need, and we've created those resources, one of them being a tokenization resource that I'm very proud of, which is where the tokenization feature I know and love so much from V1 magically disappeared when we went to DSC. And I wasn't willing to stand for that. So I wrote my own tokenization resource that you can now download that brings that feature back so that you can start using it in your vNext deployments, right? We actually, the Ranger group just deployed that. So it's officially and it's all supported and all that nice stuff. The final cool thing about DSC is that it allows you to store your configuration as code. As the configuration of your machine changes, you can actually version that alongside the software in which it supports. Every time I produce a build and I deploy that build, I'm actually deploying not only the code, but the configuration that supports that particular piece of code. The server's not only able to take the files, but also guarantee that I do have exactly what you said I'm supposed to have. It even checks on a periodic basis that it still matches the last sent desired configuration, called a consistency check. It will go back and say, hey, it's been 15 minutes. I wonder if I still look like I'm supposed to look. And if not, I will go make myself so, or if you want me to, just scribble into the event log, I'm now no longer in compliance. It's completely up to you. So very, very powerful technology. And we can use this with release management. Very similar to Desired State Configuration is Chef. That's why I said if you know Chef, you kind of know DSC already. Because when you're building those recipes are instructions that describe what you want your servers to look like. You combine those in cookbooks, and you execute those cookbooks on your nodes, right? DSC is a very similar technology. So if you like one or the other, you can use them both interchangeably, and we're going to be dealing with it today. Cameras up, because the screen I was talking to you about is about to come up. My friends at Wintellect have given you guys 4 hours of free Wintellect Now training. So the guys who just walked out of the room just lost out on 4 hours of free training. You got to stay till the end. So go ahead and just go log into their website. Use that code, go ahead and enjoy some of their content that they have available for you, a lot of good stuff. All right, enough talk, time now for demo. So this is the point where I'm actually gonna put the rubber to the road, and we're gonna try to see if we can get this stuff to actually work.
All right. So I kindly vaguely told you about the application.
So what we've done here is we have an application that has a Java front end written in Eclipse, backed by a .NET API. So it's a web API and written in C#. So what we want to be able to do is be able to track the work, build the work, and deploy the work all as one project. I don't want my Java teams over in Atlassian and Bamboo and Jenkins and all that stuff, and my .NET team over in TFS and all this stuff. I want all the teams in one group because I'm still tracking one project. I want to be able to track it as an entity. I want to be able to test it as an entity, deploy it, build it, the whole nine yards. So it's a very simple application. So let me just take you on a quick tour. This looks like I cheated, because I know you guys are thinking, hold on, man. You said it was written in Java, but that is clearly the MVC template, right? Because if you go file new MVC project, that's exactly what it looks like. Don't be suspicious. That's exactly what I did. And then I took the JavaScript, and I took the CSS, and I just took it over into Eclipse, and I'll prove it to you, right? Because I thought I should have changed it a little bit more than I did, but trust me, it is. Another thing that I want to talk about was that tokenization feature I was telling you about. If we come to the About page, what I want to point out to you is this message right here, your application description page, this is actually coming from the web API, the word itself. Now, the way it's being displayed, the fact that it's an H2, I believe, instead of a paragraph, that's actually being controlled by the Java team. So as the product owner of this project, I state that I want you guys to change the text and the size, which means I'm affecting both the Java team and the .NET team. And I want to track that progress as a unit, deploy it, test it, and so on and so forth. So right now, what my goal is going to be able to do is to be able to change that. But down below here, you'll notice that there's an about URL and a content URL. That I just screwed that up. That's not what I wanted to do. These items here, I'll do a circle instead, since I messed that up too. I want you to keep an eye on that value, because this is my dev environment. I also have a QA environment, and I'll show you that here in just a second. So those values are different, because just imagine a database connection. If I switch over to this guy, these values are different. You guys see that? This one says QA. So when I deploy the code, I can't just copy the files out. I have to then go update where these URLs point, to make sure that my dev points at the right backend, that's .NET, and then my QA points at the right backend. But you guys can replace this with a connection string to your database or what other configuration information that needs to change by environment. I just picked this for demonstration purposes, but you understand the goal is I have values that need to be managed and changed per environment. And I'm going to show you how we're able to do that as well. So that's the application. It's pretty simple. And to prove that it is inside of Eclipse and Visual Studio, here is my web API. Very simple. As you can see, it said your application description page, and I'm changing it to FiberCam Fiber 2014. And so the text is going to change, which is what we want. But we also want the description of it to change, or the representation of it, and that comes from here. I'm inside of Eclipse. This is a Spring MVC application, so it's all Eclipse-based and all Java-based. And I made the necessary changes to change it from an H3, I believe it was, to a simple paragraph inside of a div. I also wanted to show you where I'm using those URLs I just mentioned. So if I go to my home controller here, my home controller is actually reading those values from here. So this is where it's actually going into what we call a properties file. So I was not a Java developer, right? I know enough Java to get me this demo running, right? I am a .NET developer, so I know what a web.config was. The equivalent of a web.config is a properties file from what I was able to find out in the Java world. It looks like an INI file. It has a value names and then the values for that particular name value pair. I can then read those values inside of my application so that I can do certain things with it like I would do with a normal web.config. And as you can see down here, this is what it looks like before I deploy it. Clearly, those are not the values you guys saw in the web application. This value has to be overwritten at deploy time to make sure it points at the right location. And I'll show you how we do that with Chef. All right, so now I mentioned that we have continuous integration, continuous deployment. So all I have to do here, this is Team Explorer, by the way, and I should be more specific. This is Team Explorer everywhere, because it is the plugin that lives inside of Eclipse, no matter where you are in Eclipse. It gives me access to my work item tracking, gives me access to my documents, reports, my source control, everything that I need to be productive on a daily basis. And what it's showing me right now is that I have two pending changes. Files have been changed on my hard drive that I've yet to check in that need to go into the source control system, trigger a build, and then hopefully trigger a release. And then in a moment, we'll be able to see that that actual page has been done. And while that's happening in the background, I'll take you on a tour of some of the other parts of the system.
So let's go ahead and just check this in. And while you note, I'm down here at the bottom, I've actually associated a work item that says change text. So our product owner said, I want you to change the text. We actually created a work item for that. And that work item is going to be associated to this particular build. So that I'll always be able to go back and look at the traceability. For some reason, my network is moving very, very slowly. So now I am getting nervous. Hopefully, this is going to go off and save. Where's my network? Drum roll. Now, no doubt, right?
This is taking a lot longer than it's supposed to. And this isn't even part of my demo. This is the part that leads into my demo. So this is going to be a long demo, I have a feeling. So hopefully this will save here in just a second. It's trying to update. There we go.
So now let's go ahead and see. That's worth a round of applause right there that was able to save a freaking file. All right.
Now let's go back here and start looking around what we're really interested in. This should be triggering off this particular build. Ed talked about this a little bit, but what I wanted to point out here is how easy it was for me to be able to do a .NET build right alongside a Maven build. When I did this demo previously, I think I did it at TechEd Europe. So if you go and look at that demo, I do something very similar. I had to go through so many gymnastics to take MS Build and get it to do both, and to play nice with release management, and to trigger the release afterwards. If you look at what I had to write, you'd be like, man, it's not worth it. Don't worry, I shared that. So if you are in that world, I shared what I did because it was that hard to get to work the first time. So when I came here, and all I had to do was say, you know what? I need to do a Maven build. And I clicked on this tab here. Next thing I know, I had access to Maven and Ant. I had access to Docker and Grable. I had access to everything that I needed to. And what's really nice is these are all open source and extendable. So if there's something in this list that you don't see, don't feel that we can't do it. Just write it yourself. And I did the exact same thing. I'm using a technique called deployment slots. And if you go down here, I'll show you when we get to the release. I actually added my own resource or task that would swap my slots for me because it wasn't in there automatically. Right? So you can actually do whatever it is that you need to be done here. So let's go and see if it actually triggered that release for me. So we're going to go back here to our, go back to queued, and hopefully we have something running perfect. So this is the build running again. They've changed it quite a bit. So it's actually, not only did it run my build, it ran .NET unit test, and it ran JUnit test against my Java application. I didn't have to say, well, we're doing a Java build, so we can't leverage your JUnit test. Everything that I expected to happen when I build Java or build .NET actually happened simultaneously, side by side. And it's already done, and it already dropped to my output. We can go and take a closer look at some of the stuff that actually happened. So if I click on Maven here, it'll show me the log of my Maven build. And as you can see down here at the bottom, it actually ran 3 JUnit tests as part of the build. And if they had failed, my build would have failed. I also ran some .NET tests as well. And I can see that even better if I were to go back up and look at my actual build output. So here are my test results. The first link is to my .NET, and my second link is to my Maven. And I can go ahead and click on that for you. And we can effortlessly move between our build into our test hub, and from our test hub into our release hub. To do this in the old stuff, I would have been inside of the fat client, inside of RM. I would have been a part of the web for some of this. I would have been in Visual Studio for the build part. I would have had to jump to 3 different tools to be able to show you what I just showed you in one user interface. We're trying to work really, really hard to make sure that you have one pane of glass to which you can view all of your DevOps pipeline. Right? From your builds to your check-ins to your releases to your test results, everything that you need to is literally going to be one click away, not start menu, fire up Microsoft Test Manager, go try to look at my results. Start menu, fire up release management, let me go over there and approve my next stage of my deployment. Right? We have everything that you need right here in front of you. So these are Maven results. I'm also going to show you later on in the demo Selenium results, Coded UI results. I have unit test results from .NET. No matter how you want to test your application, we have you supported so that you can do it and then visualize the results right here in front of you. Right? No need for you to have to start moving around like crazy. So our build is already done. And with our build being done, we should have a release in flight. And I can tell that we do basically by this color here. So this is telling me that this stage right now has a release in flight, and I can see the release that's already inside of QA. And if I wanted to, I can take a closer look. So let's just go ahead and see what's happening here. I'm going to go ahead and click a closer look here.
So as you can see, I have 2 of 5 tasks that still need to be executed within our dev stage. Afterwards, we're going to go to our QA stage. I had an automatic approval of the very first entry into my dev stage, and I'll show you how I configured that. That's why it didn't stop. It's also going to exit the dev stage, assuming that all my tests actually pass. It's going to do a Selenium test of the user interface against the Chrome browser to verify that the Java application actually was deployed successfully. So again, you might not be using IE, you might be using Chrome or Firefox. Or even if you're using IE, you're required to test on Chrome and Firefox as well, and we have the ability to do that not only with Coded UI, but also with the Selenium set of tools as well. A lot of this stuff is going to be clickable. A lot of it is even coming. Again, these are all preview bits. No one can actually play with this just yet, but we're working on it. If I were to go a little bit deeper, you can actually see exactly what's going on here. So what we have is an automatic approval. So it shows me that this was automatically approved. I can download any of the logs that I need to. And as we can see right now, we're basically poking a chef node. What I mean by poking a chef node is that we actually uploaded new values to a chef environment, saying, hey, look, we took all these files and we copied them into Azure Blob Storage. Now, we want your Linux node to go know where in Blob Storage to go get the files from so they can copy them down into Tomcat. So the way that we did that, and I'll show you that real quickly, is we used an environment inside of Chef, we used a task inside of Release Management that then updated the values from what we just used so that that environment would know exactly what to go get. So let's go back real quick and look at how we edited this thing here. So if I were to take you to our Chef task, here I have a list of what we call attributes inside the chef world, and I can use macros inside of RM to be able to expand them to values that were just calculated as we process this particular release. Because every time the drop location will be different, the build number will be different, and we need a way to sharing that information with those other systems. And we simply do that via an environment inside of Chef. How many people are using Chef already? A couple of you guys, okay? So I'll take you really quickly. Chef has a really nice interface for you to be able to manage all of your assets. In the past, what we made you do is that you would add a server to Chef, then you'd have to come back into RM and add that same server again. It felt like double work. So what we wanted to do is allow you to manage everything inside of Chef, your environments, your servers, and then from the RM side, we're able to target the environment. So you don't have to add the servers in two different places, right? Really reducing the amount of work it takes to manage your Chef environment. On this particular node here, if you come in here, my little application was called People Tracker, and it's updated these values. One of them is what storage account in Azure do I want you to use? What prefix of the container do I want you to go find so that you can go get the latest version of the files that I just copied up there for you? I also have in there the about URL and the contact URL. Those I can update from RM or I can leave them static because for the environment, they really don't change. But should they, I have the power from RM to actually drive a change in those particular values should for whatever reason they need to point somewhere else. So that's the Chef part. And if we go back, I'll talk about some of the other pieces as well. This is actually running a battery of Selenium test. I shouldn't call it a battery, it's just one test, but it proves the point. There is a Selenium test that fires up Chrome, goes to the dev version of my website, and verifies that the text has been changed to what it's supposed to be changed to. Okay? And then we're going to repeat this inside of our QA environment, but we're going to do it slightly differently, because in the QA environment, I don't need to deploy the web API. The web API inside of Azure is using something called deployment slots. Who's familiar with the deployment slots? All right. We have an awesome, awesome feature called websites inside of Azure. Automatically, you can scale them up or scale them down, and they have something called deployment slots. So if I had application A as a website, I could say I would like there to be another version of it called a slot that I would want to be able to swap into production at a moment's notice. It gives you 0 downtime deployments. I can actually take my time and deploy to that slot, get all the files up there, run a quick test against it, and when I'm ready, simply swap them. And no one knows that I've done it, because all we do in the back end is do a VIP swap. The virtual IP that was pointing at dev is now pointing at production, and we swap the other one around. 0 downtime deployment. And that's what I'm utilizing here. And out of the box, this task did not exist. But I knew what I wanted to do. I simply wanted to swap my slots. And if you come over here and you add a new task, you scroll down to the bottom, it looks like it's been there the entire time. But I wrote that, it's a little piece of PowerShell. I then gave it to RM and said, I want this to be a task that I can perform multiple times, and I want it really easy to use. And now you can add as many as you want to. We have a V2 chef. I really didn't like the way that the chef tool worked, so I wrote my own.
and I add it into the system, and you can do this to extend RM to be whatever it is that you need it to be. So I wanted to point out how easy it is to extend, because that's a really, really big plus. The mantra of RM, and build for that matter, is if it can be done from PowerShell, it can be done from build. If it can be done from PowerShell, it can be done during your release. It's that simple. If you can show me a PowerShell command that does whatever it is that you want to do, I can now plug it in to your release. I can have test run before or after it. I can have approvals firing before and after it. So a lot of you have probably already invested in PowerShell because you got tired of doing the same task over and over again. You don't have to throw any of that away. We can leverage all of that PowerShell as part of release management. Anything you can do from PowerShell, you can do from RM. So a couple of things I want to talk to you about as well is adding a new environment is just a click of a button. You can go ahead and give it a name if I wanted to go ahead and add prod here. I also get to control things, for example, like who the approvers are and if I want it automatic. On my dev slot, it looked exactly like this. Both of the first two boxes were checked. On the QA slot, however, it did not. I actually unchecked them and put myself there as the approver. So it's going to pause before it actually goes into the QA stage, waiting for me to say, yes, everything looks okay. So you can put yields in there wherever you feel that they are necessary. Another thing that we realize is there's information that needs to be managed as far as what we call variables. So this is where I'm able to store what I want to be assigned to this particular environment, such that when it runs this environment, it's able to take any variables here that I have and use them to share with external systems as well. So it gives me a really nice way of managing that. The little padlock to the right allows me to encrypt this information as well. So if you need to lock this down, if this is a password that only a certain people should know, you don't have to worry about it just floating around in plain text. We can actually encrypt that information and protect it for you as well. This variable here pertains just to that one environment. But sometimes there's variables that apply to the entire release, regardless of what environment it is. Instead of having to duplicate it, we actually give you the ability here at a higher level to define that particular environment variable. Here I'm saying that I have a storage account and a container I want to use across all my stages. I don't want to have to repeat it when I define my variables, so I define it at a higher level, right? And that storage key allows me to get into, obviously, my Azure storage as well. We have things called artifacts. If you're coming from the old RM world, think of artifacts as components. Okay? I'm already working on a blog post that maps the new vernacular to the old vernacular because we've changed almost every word, right? But I have a cheat sheet, and as soon as I'm allowed to publish it, it will be one of the first blog posts I publish. So if you're familiar with components, that's what these guys are. I'm saying I have one called People Service, and I have one called People Tracker. These are the components of my application that I'm going to need to deploy. And I get to target those two different environments. Our integration with Chef, unfortunately not many people here are using it yet, is much, much tighter than it's ever been. What I mean by that is not only do I get to tell it information, I actually create an actual linkage between my RM server and my Chef server. It's not just arbitrary, hey, here's my username and password. It's a tight integration and linkage to where they can actually communicate to each other. Not only can I manage Chef this way, I can actually wire up Jenkins this way. All right, we're really understanding that people aren't going to use our build system all the time. They already have investments in Jenkins. They already have investments in other systems. And we're giving you the ability through what we call service connections to be able to establish connections with those other tools that you might want to be able to use. Obviously, we have Chef and Azure, but you can also use things like Jenkins. I've seen the Jenkins demo, so I know that we have support for that as well, and more are coming all the time. The generic one is for any service that has a username and password and a URL. Right, we'll be able to go ahead and leverage that for you and make a connection for you as well. So let's go back and see how far our release is going and see if we can go ahead and start doing some cool approvals here. So on this system, I have my release that's running. And I wanted to talk about the approval workflow, too, because I think the approval workflow is really, really nice in this particular version. If I were to go to my releases, in the past, if I was in the FAT client, there was only one place I could go to approve my releases. If I got an email, then I could go to the web client, but there's only one way for me to go in there and approve my releases. Here, I'm looking at a list of all my current releases that are in flight, and that little icon is letting me know that there is an approval here waiting for me, and I don't even have to navigate off of the screen to approve it. I can just go ahead and approve it right here. But I might not have landed on this particular page. What if I was actually landed on the details of this particular guy? Well, it just so happens that this guy is here as well, and if I wanted to, I could approve it from this particular screen. But yet and still, there's yet another version that we could actually be looking at. We could be looking down here at the details of this particular item, and here he is again. So we're trying to make sure whatever it is that you need to do, it's right there in front of you all the time. I don't want you navigating through some clunky user interface to get to that one page that allows me to do the task that I've come here to do. Okay?
So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and let's verify that it actually worked first before I go ahead and lie. I know that it worked. The reason that I know that it worked is because I have a Selenium test that verified that it worked. Had it not worked, we'd know because I'd have a red X there versus the green check. And there, as you can see, my application has been updated. Both parts of my application. The text got smaller, which means the Java side got updated. The text changed, which means the .NET side got updated. All happened automatically all at once. But if we go over here to my other stage, nothing's happened yet. The reason why is because we're yielding our deployment. That approval stops the deployment in its tracks and says Donovan has to come in here and say it is okay for us to enter this environment. If he doesn't say so, we're just going to sit here forever, right? So it's really nice to have those gates that can slow it down if it needs to, get that human intervention, track that interaction, and then let your process continue. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back now, and we're going to actually say, looks good in dev. Let's go to QA. And I'm simply going to go ahead and approve this. At this point, it's obviously going to kick off again and start running. This is a really good time for me to start taking questions, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to actually pop up something here. This is actually my agent running. It doesn't have to run as a console. It can actually run as a service as well. But what should be happening now, as you can see, it's actually downloading artifacts. In a moment, IE is going to pop up behind me, but I'm going to be answering questions, so I won't be able to see that. So I'm going to trick you guys into clapping for me, because when that IE window pops up, I need you guys to start clapping so I know that it's actually running. Deal? All right, who has questions? Do me a big favor. Find a microphone because they're recording this. Anyone have a question that they want to ask now while we're waiting for this to run? Anyone? Anyone? I'm doing that good of a job? Great. Perfect. Here we go. Good, good, good. Go ahead. You first.
Do those run in serial or can you run them in parallel, the different steps?
That's a good question. We can actually parallelize those, and we can actually do, for example, in the build perspective, you can actually run your build, if you're doing both debug and release, simultaneously at the exact same time as well. So yes, we can parallelize that. If you're really interested into the build stuff, Chris Patterson, the PM for build, is actually doing a talk, I think, at 5 or 5:30. It's going to be a deep dive on build. Right? I'm doing more of the RM side. He's doing more of the build side. Another question.
You mentioned something about it not being released yet. How much of this can I use today?
None of it.
Okay.
All right. I have a question over here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a very violent mic.
Yeah, it took me out. So is there going to be integration with Puppet as well?
Absolutely, yes. So there are talks of integration with Puppet. And what I want you guys to realize is if we don't make the integration, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You can make whatever integrations you want. If there's an API that can be exploited through a PowerShell, then that can be part of our tool set. You would just simply add your own task there, okay? Perfect. Questions over here on the right.
Is there going to be feature parity on your on-prem solution versus Visual Studio Online?
Feature parity. Can you give me an example of what you think is going to be missing?
Or I'm just wondering if all the features you're showing for Visual Studio Online would also be available for TFS.
Oh, gotcha, perfect. Now I understand the question. Yes, so what you're going to get on the box if you're going to install on-prem will match this.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, good question. Sorry about that. One more?
So I noticed that you actually put, you had to know the addresses of the dev and the QA. Can you give that power to the developers?
Yes,
so
we
they
can.
They know what servers they need to be pointing to in each of the environments?
Sure, we can actually put that information in the hands of whoever actually needs it. We can give permissions to either author them there inside of our workflow, or as I mentioned earlier, actually I wasn't talking out loud. We had a customer inside, we dog food this tool, right? So internally at Microsoft, we use RM. And one of our internal users, they had this existing CMDB that had all their secrets in it and all their configuration data in it that their developers were actually driving. They didn't want to move that inside of release management. So what they were able to do was, via PowerShell, call out to their CMDB during their release and grab all the secrets and configuration data and then flush it into their release. So wherever you want your data, your developers to store and track that information, we'll be able to go get it for you at runtime.
Does support Shell script or Python script or Ruby script as a steps?
That's a good one. Do me a favor, ask that to Chris Patterson. Right, if you can get to that 5 o'clock, he'll know that answer for certain. I know this for a fact, the agent itself does run on Linux, it runs on Mac, and it runs on Windows. There's a Node.js version of it that runs on those other environments.
So I know it supports Node. I don't know if it supports those other languages, though. It's a good question.
Hello. We often see automatic configuration through DSC or Chef inside release management. Are there any plan to automatic provisioning? I mean, for having a dev and QA platform, which are not yet available, but which will be provided during the workflow.
Absolutely, yes, because we have things where we can actually integrate with Azure Resource Manager, right?
Yay!
So we'll be able to define in a normal ARM script, a little JSON, I need these environments, I need these machines, and it will stand it out for you as part of our release. Absolutely. And we, go ahead, yeah, follow up, go ahead. Question.
So someone had to ask, when is this all available?
That's a good question, and I'd also have to ask that, right? Because these are all internal bits. The team is working as fast as they can to try to get this ready for a release. So I don't know any dates. I told them I'm going to deflect any date question you ask because they actually didn't tell me any either, right? So I honestly don't know when this is going to go GA so that we can actually play with it. I know they're working as fast as they possibly can. And it feels, believe it or not, I struggled a little bit because I was working with two different teams trying to get all this stuff to work. But it's working very, very consistently. They're very, very close.
What if you're a dev in different environments or different domains that aren't trusted?
Oh, great question. And I'm going to answer it now, but I'm going to go even deeper at Ignite. So watch the video I do there. So we have shadow accounts that will allow you to cross domains. You can also have, in this instance, co-located agents, which is kind of cool. So you can actually have an agent in the domain that your server's not in, so that it doesn't have to cross that domain boundary when it's actually trying to deploy to those. So you can either use shadow accounts, which we've done historically. Shadow account is basically the exact same username and password in one domain that doesn't exist in another, and Windows will allow that to authenticate across. Or you can do what we call co-located agents, where you actually take the agent and install it in the domain that you need it in, and then the server will be able to communicate with it. Great question. The agent is this little, the question was, the agent is a server. It's a service, right? This agent right here, but it also runs on Linux and on Mac as well. It's just a Node.js server. This is just an application that runs there. Are we out of questions? And we're only about 8 minutes left. That's what I wanted to show you guys, because that firing up there, this was also a lot easier. When I did this before, I had to install a test controller and a test agent and a Microsoft Test Manager plan and write the coded UI and then finally get all this stuff to work. To get that coded UI test to run, I simply had to say, I want to run a coded UI test, right? And the agent took care of all the rest for me. I wanted to run a Selenium test. I just simply said, I want to run a Selenium test. The agent took care of everything for me. The agent has something called demands on it. So to be perfectly honest, this agent I knew had all the capabilities it needed, because you get to describe what capabilities it has, and then you can demand that be true with your release or with your build, and it will then find what agent has all the demands to basically satisfy your needs. And I knew that this had Visual Studio installed, and that's all I needed, versus the agent control and all the gymnastics I had to jump through in the past. It was so, so easy to get this coded UI test to start running for me. Another question?
We're pretty heavily invested in the old version of
Sure. Release
management. Is the upgrade path pretty
There
seamless,
is an upgrade path coming. I haven't seen it yet, but I've asked that specific question because I'm a huge proponent of it. I've been selling it like mad. I'm thinking they're going to kill me if there's not a nice way. They say, we promise you there will be a upgrade path. Great. Right? So that will be taken care of for you. There is a do our eval thingy. I think if I move over to PowerPoint, I think. So I wanted to go over, we went through the entire demo. Thankfully for me, it actually worked. And what we're supposed to do now is show you this little thing here. Guys, please, please, please fill out these evals. I read every single one of them. There's a funny story about me when I was in Europe. I got to speak at TechEd Europe. I spoke on Wednesday, and I spoke again on Friday. I read a review that came from my Wednesday talk. I stayed up all night Thursday, literally 24 hours straight, redoing my demo for Friday so that I can make that guy happy. I take it that serious. So please fill them out. Be honest, but be fair. Because if you liked me, then they'll invite me back. And if not, then I have no business here anyway. And so just be honest, but please, please take the time to fill them out. I will literally read every single one of them. It's been a pleasure. I hope this was helpful. Enjoy the rest of Build.